Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Colin, what's this? 16-year-old Colin's dad picked up a rumpled piece of paper from the mail shelf. Oh, that. It's just my schedule for next year. You gotta sign it, that's all. Well, wait a minute. Colin's dad smoothed out the wrinkles and began reading the entries. This says you're taking pottery and printmaking, but you don't have any science. Oh, I don't know, Colin replied. I'll just take whatever's easiest. Whatever's easiest, Colin's dad sputtered. Aren't you supposed to have at least a biology and chemistry on your transcript? Colleges look at these things. Don't sweat it, Dad. I'll take earth science or something. Colleges don't care. From a parent's perspective, what do we need to know as our high schoolers look toward college? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. We are fortunate to have an expert today as our guest. Dr. Lori Potts-Dupre is a college counselor who has been in private practice for 8 years. She works with students primarily in public schools across the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area. She has 2 daughters, one a senior in high school and one a freshman. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Dr. Dupre.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
Dr. Dupre, what's the first thing you tell high school students who are planning their 10th, 11th, and 12th grade courses?
Well, I love the story you all just told because I hear that a lot, the one side from the parents and the other from the students, and I try to mediate a little bit. Definitely true that colleges, really the first thing they look at are the high school transcripts. And it is very important for students, and we, you know, try to approach this in a balanced way, but take a very challenging curriculum. It's not called college preparatory for nothing. It really is to get you ready for college and to make thoughtful choices. Often these days in some of the larger public schools especially, they have a lot of choices, which is great. But it takes a little more time and thought, I think, to pick good ones. And what I hear from admissions people increasingly is, for example, they like to see 4 years of English, 4 years of science, 4 years of math, 4 years of foreign languages, and also social studies, history, etc. Now, not every student can take every course. You know, that's asking too much. But just to know what colleges are looking for, I think, will help families make good decisions.
When they begin to think about college, what's the most important thing for students to remember?
What I tell families, and I hope they hear me, sometimes I tell them many times because I think it's so important to remember this. We focus an awful lot these days on the selectivity, how hard it is to get into college these days, especially some colleges. But really and truly, it's much more up to the family and the student than it is to the colleges. In other words, the student has so much more to say and to do about where he or she ends up going. They really pick more than they're picked. And that's the beauty, I think, really, of the American system.
How can parents be helpful as this whole process begins? We want to be helpful, not annoying.
Right. And I know, you know, even better than I did before because I have my own senior this year. Some teens, we all know this, right, really can't do the scheduling and sort of the logistical aspects as well. And I think it can be really helpful to have parents help with that. But probably most important is to really affirm them, to help them move to a more independent mode, because after all, a year or so from now, they will be on their own. So you really want to help them with that transition as much as possible, support them in making their own decisions, and be there, you know, for them. But of course, don't try to impose, which is hard for parents. You know, we know our kids, we know what they need. But to hold back a little bit in terms of really leading them by the hand at this point.
I heard a very wise psychologist talk to parents of high school students about the concept of the kids not getting their act together for this whole process, which really is a long one. And she said, imagine that you had a very lengthy job to do. And the job involved lots and lots of steps that had to be coordinated, and the job didn't make you feel very good about yourself. how fast would you tackle that? And I thought, oh, boy.
Exactly. And developmentally, a lot of them are at a stage where, you know, they're really good at procrastinating and in denial anyway. So, yes. And also, I think it's a little bit complicated because this process, unlike some things in life where you really can say step one, step two, step three, it's more linear. I think this process, you're sometimes going on a couple or even three tracks at once, which is a real skill that a lot of adults, you know, have attained after a lot of work, but it's hard to expect a 17-year-old to do that.
I guess there are a lot of little aids that we might be able to employ to help them be organized.
Absolutely, absolutely. And one, I think, which we were talking about earlier, is to really start out with a space in the house. And it can be a drawer, it can be a box, or a corner of a room. And to really start out in an organized fashion where you can keep information in a timely manner, take notes on everything, you know, keep the dates on both the family calendar and the student's calendar. Little steps like that, I think, can really help. And I also think, in terms of preparing for the application, it can be a really good idea to, again, have another little space where the student can just throw everything relating to their current year experience. Ticket stubs, photos, journal entries, that kind of thing, a kind of a record of what they're doing. And it will really help them when it comes time to fill out the applications because they'll have that kind of memory treasure trove. And I think also kind of nice for later on down the road, you know, a way to kind of document that part of their life so they can share with their own kids maybe.
Mm-hmm. We had a system in our house where they had to write an essay every weekend. And they had a list of all the essays that the applications they had selected required. It was just a big list on a yellow pad. And the essays were not by any means finished essays, but you had to tackle a topic. And then you were free for the weekend. You didn't have to do college stuff on the weekend. You could go out. You could do whatever you want. But when it came time to put the essays into the applications, they just had to polish them.
That's, you know, a great idea.
It was a folder full of essays. It really helped.
When you talk to students and parents about what colleges are looking for, what do you tell them in terms of how they decide what students to admit?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's important to know for each individual college what their admissions office says about what they're looking for, because it actually can differ depending on the college and the type of college. For example, an engineering school, obviously they're going to focus more on the math and science coursework and even your scores in particular areas. But generally speaking, my group of independent consultants nationwide, we do a survey every 5 years and ask colleges, what are you looking for in the year 2002-2003? And for 20 years, they've told us more or less the same things, although the priorities have changed a little bit. This year, we were all very excited. They had a new item on the list. So I'll get to that. But first, which has been true for years, what we talked about before, the really good curriculum, the 4-year record, challenging courses, and really almost second, good grades in those courses. I mean, the two go together, but to get straight A's in obviously basket weaving or something like that.
Pottery,
exactly, is not as impressive as often a B in a really tough course. So kids, I think, need to hear that, you know, over and over again. Definitely still test scores for some schools are quite important. We're seeing increasing numbers of colleges that don't even require them anymore, which is very exciting. Mount Holyoke, for example, recently added to the list of schools that don't require test scores. That's a relief to a lot of kids who are great students, really bright, just don't test well. But down the list a little bit, the new item this year was demonstrated enthusiasm. And what this gets to really is, from the college's point of view, again, we kind of focus on how hard it is to get into schools. The colleges are very concerned about their yield figures. That is, of the offers of acceptance they put out, that a large number, maybe even 100%, end up attending.
So this puts pressure on the early, it's not early action, it's early.
Early decision
early
and
decision.
Early action, exactly,
yes.
Right.
Yes.
It really explains partly the big push behind early decision because that is 100% yield. So it's a little bit of a conundrum, I think, for a lot of families because knowing this, that it can be, for some schools, an advantage in the admissions process. People are looking to, you know, they're thinking strategically. They're looking for a school that their student absolutely loves, knows in a heartbeat, if accepted, I would go there. Then they feel comfortable applying early decision. But, of course, for many students, they don't have a number one all-out favorite, and maybe they need a little more time to investigate, to visit, to think, and to see where they get in, and then visit again and make their decision.
And the deadline for the early decision applications is quite early, isn't that right?
It's very early. Some places it's even October 15th now. They keep pushing it back. Typically it's November 1 or November 15th.
Which means a student going into his or her senior year needs to be pretty comfortable knowing what college he or she wants if they're going to go that route.
That's right.
So that's a lot of pressure very early developmentally for a student.
I think so.
Which means that in junior year sometime, the student has to do a lot of investigating.
Mm-hmm. And often, you know, they're really not ready. And I have to say in my practice, which is, you know, a small number every year relatively, most of my students do not end up going early decision simply because they just need that extra time. And you know, I have a statistic nationally that really 90-some percent of kids get into their first or second choice school. So that's really good news. And I think in the Washington area in particular, you know, we don't hear that as often. But that's most people, you know, who don't take that route and do take the extra time, it still really can work out.
That's very heartening.
That comes from making wise decisions beforehand, choosing intelligently
which
schools to apply to.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And having, I think these days, a little bit maybe longer list than we did 5 or 10 years ago.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion of high school students facing college.
Two excellent books written by hosts Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids, are available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. Today we are talking with Dr. Laurie Potts-Dupre about high school students facing college. So how many colleges do you recommend? This sounds like a huge number for kids
right.
to work with.
Well, we used to say six was plenty. And you've probably heard of kind of you have a range of schools, all that you love. That's the bottom line. You have to be on there because you love them. Perhaps two in the safety category, two in the realistic, and two reach. Now I'm telling families, maybe let's add a couple more. And for some families, even more, you know, depending on the particular student and what they're looking for and their resources and time and energy and a lot of things. But more typically these days, six to eight. I think sometimes the visits are what provide the enthusiasm and are really an important piece. Another, you know, difficult logistic, financially, et cetera, to arrange, but I feel like it's just so important to do because really being on the campus can just, you know, the students just get very excited and feel like this is why I'm doing this, going through this process, is so that I can make a good choice and be in a wonderful place that will be, in a sense, a new home away from home for me and just filled with opportunities.
They need to, if they can, be in the dorms with kids, go to activities, not just the tour and
Absolutely.
Not just the stuff they might do with the parents.
One of the things that we did with, I think, all three of my big boys, when we went someplace, we would call ahead and find out if there was somebody who went to their high school that they would at least tangentially know or at least who would be able to tell them how it was to come from that high school to this college.
That is a great idea. That is a great idea. And I tell students and families to really reach out. It's a little bit maybe of a shotgun approach, but tell everybody you're looking at college and get input because friends of friends may have good information for you. And for most people, you know, I recommend unless you have a fantastic memory, do jot down those little items of information and put them in the file. So
and also a lot of note-taking after you leave a college visit.
Absolutely. Some families actually do a videotape. They like that. Or take pictures. or just buy postcards in the campus bookstore. That's what I do. Mm-hmm. And bring them home, because even the visual cues can help you remember. Because you all know, if you do even a couple in a day over a week, it can start to run together. So,
which is another thing I think we all learned by trial and error. Don't put too many
yes.
in a week, or you're going to really forget all this stuff and it's going to be very muddy.
Yes, definitely.
The other thing we learned by trial and error is don't go when college is not in session.
Yes.
You see very nice buildings, but it really doesn't tell you what's going on.
It's so true, and that's part of the difficulty for a lot of families, because that means going when college is in session, which typically is when high school is in session, and it might mean, luckily, a lot of high schools do allow kids some days off, mm-hmm. but it might mean taking kids out of school, and teachers everywhere will hate me for saying this, but I think it's worth it.
Mm-hmm.
I really do. And to build in a little free time on the trip so that it's fun and a chance for more bonding and, you know, good family times as well.
I've really looked forward to those kinds of trips. It's been wonderful. Even though when we got on the campus, every kid, each son of mine said, "Mom, I will see you later. I don't want to see you on campus." But that
then
was
you
okay.
Then you can go scout out your own and bring some more information.
And the kid was always off with another kid.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was the time that even the quietest kid could ask questions he would never ask in a tour group.
Sure, that makes sense. I did have one family, though. And this was funny after the fact, not at the time. The dad actually called me and reminded me, because they were in Denver, actually. He called me from Denver, and he said, "I can't get her to leave the hotel room. We've come all the way out here. We're scheduled to do a tour. She doesn't want to go."
Oh, dear.
Yeah. And he said, "Well, I guess I'll just leave her here, and I'll go on the tour and come back and tell her about it." Well, luckily, he came back. I think maybe she'd been tired from the trip and all, and he told her so many great things about the school that he'd seen. He was clearly so enthusiastic. She said, "Would you mind if we postpone our flight back and go over there right now?" So luckily it worked Aww. Out, but those are the kinds of challenges, you know, you can face sometimes with these trips. Another little tip is often colleges do start their fall sessions in even mid-August.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes that can be a good time. You're still not in high school, and, you know, the end of August can be a good time to visit. And generally campuses are pretty upbeat at that point, too. So you don't want to go during midterms or finals.
With your criteria in mind, how can students make the best use of their high school years?
Good question. Definitely to devote themselves, at least, you know, to the extent they can, to their schoolwork, because really that four-year record is the most important. And to take advantage of not only what their school offers, but also their area. I've had students do film courses at a local community college, take different languages, including Greek and Arabic, from recent immigrants who've moved to the area, that kind of thing. So you, of course, do what you can in your high school, but look outside for other opportunities. And to really think about, even that early, What am I really excited about? What are my passions or my passion? And feel free to run with that, because, of course, it's a good thing. And also, it really will help you in college admissions. Students have been surprised, for example, you know, they come in and I ask them, you know, about their activities and all, and they say, "Well, you know, I'm a little embarrassed, but I've just really been into Ultimate Frisbee. And I started a team, and it's just been great fun, but I don't think the colleges would be that interested." Well, guess what? They can be, and often they are. And so it's really a matter of not doing what you think you're supposed to do, but really following your own passion. It'll come together.
This is not a fun part. Mm-hmm. What do you think about the standardized testing necessary for this whole process? How should students prepare?
Mm. Well, frankly, personally, I hate the standardized test, and probably that's in part because I just see so many talented, wonderful students who, for various different reasons, don't test well, and it can be very stressful for them. As I mentioned before, luckily, there are quite a lot of really fine colleges that don't even require that you submit your scores anymore, so that's great. But in addition, I think for most students, and I actually read some data recently that was very reassuring to me, again, nationwide, most kids really do take it in stride, and they kind of see it as part of the piece of the puzzle, and they work through it. They do prepare increasingly these days, which I think is important. Don't just walk in that first day. Really, you can prepare yourself, and there are lots of ways to do it. You can not spend very much money at all and do it on your own, especially if you're really dedicated and organized. The materials are there online in bookstores, libraries, etc. You can take one of those courses, which can be, you know, a bit expensive, but are a time and place with your peers to prepare. Or, of course, work with tutors one-on-one, which often can be a really good way to go because they can cover the material the courses cover in terms of test strategies and background and practicing, but also give you what you need in terms of real subjects, you know, improving your skills. The SAT is being changed, and I think by 2005 we'll have a new SAT. It's going to be a little bit longer. They're going to take out the analogy section and add more reading and writing kinds of things. So
I can hear the cheering all over the country and around the world. The analogies, I think, have such a terrible reputation.
Mm-hmm. We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion of high school students facing college.
For an audio cassette copy of any Parent's Perspective show, send a check or money order for $5 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. Today we're talking with Dr. Laurie Potts-Dupree about high school students facing college. When do you advise students to take the subject matter tests? If you've just taken biology in 10th grade, should you then take the subject matter test at the end of that year?
Absolutely. You take the test as soon as possible after you've done the most advanced coursework in that area. And I think especially in public schools, often students aren't aware of that, and they're not thinking about all the testing until 11th grade, or actually have kids coming in 12th grade. It's hard to believe that have not even taken the SAT 1 yet. So unfortunately, we do need to start thinking about it a little earlier.
As sort of a wrap-up to get our frantic nerves put together again a little bit, what resources would you recommend for both parents and students facing this high-pressure time?
Mm-hmm. Well, there's so much out there. In a way, that is the challenge. I mean, the good news is all the information you need is readily available, but it's really taking the time to wade through a lot of it. I recommend as a first step, maybe even just a visit to your local library in the reference section. Across the country, they have, you know, they've collected all the material there, and often the librarians can be very helpful too. So, you know, do that, and maybe start with just looking at some of the big guidebooks that we've all, you know, seen, and really take a little bit of time, especially for first-generation kids, maybe kids whose parents didn't go to college. They need to get a sense of really what is out there. What's the difference between a two-year community college, small four-year liberal arts, big public? You know, they're all different. And then we have, you know, historically black colleges, women's colleges, etc. So I think that's a good first step just to get a sense of, wow, all of these choices are available to me. And then they can start to narrow a little bit. And then, of course, online these days, there are so many resources. A very good website to start is collegeboard.com. And they have links to a number of other sites, and it's also the primary place where you do sign up for the SAT. I should mention the other test of choice, standardized test, is the ACT, which is accepted by virtually all the colleges as well. It's a little bit traditionally, geographically, been the test of choice in the Midwest and South, and the SAT on the East Coast and West Coast. It's a quite different test, more content subject-based. I will say, of my small sample of kids I've worked with over the years, many of them think it's a little bit easier. I think because it is based on high school curriculum, it doesn't have the analogy section, and it has a short scientific reasoning section, which the SAT does not. So that's another choice for students and families. Also, you don't have to report the score. Unlike the SAT, which kind of goes into the data bank, the ACT score comes to you in your high school. You choose to release it or not.
I remember there was one book that my kids found particularly helpful. That was thick, small book. Is it the Yale Guide?
Mm-hmm.
It's the one that with the kids, Insider's Guide. Insider's Guide to the colleges, that the kids themselves were interviewed for. And I think that was particularly helpful. I think any reference materials that the students can find that are based on what students' experiences have been in specific places, and especially the lesser-known schools,
Absolutely. The guidebooks, I kind of separate them into two categories. The really big, primarily numerical, statistical portraits that are so thick, and actually, if you need something as a sleep aid, just prop up one of those and you'll nod off. Then the more subjective ones, which the Yale Guide is a good example, written by students who work on the paper. Another one I like a lot is the Fisk Guide to Colleges. Mm-hmm. He's the former education editor at the New York Times. It's his own opinion a little bit, but of course taken from talking to students and polls and that kind of thing. But I think you get more of a sense of the flavor of the campus than just purely reading the numbers.
And those of us who've done this before, I think, always have to remember, throw out the old ones. Get a new one, because things really do change in a very few years.
They do, and I would add to that, even if you have a very up-to-date guide, that's a great place to start, but check everything on the college's own website, mm-hmm. because that's going to be the most up-to-date, whether it's dates or even a change in policy about, you know, how they're going to run interviews, for example. And the websites are quite amazing. I think they get the computer science majors to put them together and the graphic artists to help out. You can do virtual tours. You can do live chats with students in the different majors. It's really astonishing how much you can learn. It's great.
Now, I guess we should put in a little word about interviews, because I think they've mm-hmm. changed over the years. Mm-hmm. At the beginning, it was the student had to sell himself, and it seems now it's the college needs to sell itself to the student.
Which is a good reminder of how, from their point of view, it's really more about, for them, getting good kids to come than keeping mm-hmm. them out. I think in part because of the demographic bulge of the baby boom kids and a higher percentage wanting to attend college, many colleges that used to include the interview as a very important piece in the profile really cannot anymore. Mm. So they don't even offer interviews, which is a shame, because for a lot of students, that's where they really shine, and it's how the admissions people really get to know the candidate. Still, especially a lot of the small liberal arts colleges will have evaluative interviews that you can do on campus and sometimes in your hometown with an alum or nearby. Mm-hmm. And that's a great opportunity. And certainly, as I talked earlier about demonstrated enthusiasm, anytime an interview is offered, even if it's just informational rather than evaluative, I encourage students to do it, in part because they're going to learn more about the school, but it's also a plus, frankly, to the admission staff that they took that time and trouble to do that interview. And they are more frequently very relaxed conversations. Students often think, oh, they're going to ask me big, tough, scary questions. They really don't. And they're very good at putting students at ease and getting them just to talk about themselves. So.
Well, you have put us at ease. You have talked about wonderful things that we all needed to know. So, Dr. Laurie Potts-Dupree, thank you very much for giving us your time and your energy and a lot of information in a situation where a lot of parents are going through anxiety, not to mention their kids.
Well, thank you. It's been a real pleasure.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our book, Washington, D.C. with Kids. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. And mention show number 158. Tell us what station you're listening to if you can. Since we're airing all over the world, it's always fun to know what station you're tuning into. Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids are both available at all major bookstores and on the web.
To learn more about Parents' Perspective and our books, Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids, visit our website, http://i.am/parentsperspective. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.